Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 9, season 10. Once again, it's a busy show because we've got three other people other than my voice. So on my left, or rather on my right, I have Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
Who sounds like he's still in Africa. On my left, I have Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much. At least you asked. Notice Ryan didn't. And in the middle, we have Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson, Trevor Agnew, and Ryan Champion. How are we all doing?
We're all good.
I've been better, actually. I've been better. I feel a little bit inadequate this week because I haven't won anything. What about you, Tony?
Well, it's funny you should say that, right? I think, you know, we all do take the mick out of one another it's a podcast, isn't it? And I think we need to just draw a line in the sand just for this week, right? Because, you know, there is someone amongst us, as we speak now, that won something very, very special last week. And, you know, we all too take the mick and everything else, but we've got to be very, very serious. And this is for all of us. I think we need to take a moment and draw a line in the sand and really, really acknowledge the News Press Guild of Motor Writers Young Motor Writer of the Year Award. And congratulations, Jack Bennion.
Well, thank you very much, Tony. It's much appreciated. I would like to thank my friends, my family, my God. Is there anything else I'd like to thank? And you guys for being brilliant.
Yeah, no. Peace out and all that as well. Trev, would you like to say anything to Jack?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. As you say, we do take the mic a little bit, but to be recognised by your peers in that way, and it's a world organisation, I believe, as well, so fair play.
Yeah. Ryan, would you like to say anything to Jack?
I'm just surprised he's still with us. You know, I think we're just lucky and we should be appreciative that we have Jack Bennion. You know, the short time that he's with us on this show, we know he'll be going on to bigger and better things, but I'd just like to thank him for being here with us for at least another week.
Yeah. Two years doesn't feel like a short period of time, right? I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, 2 years.
Well, no, but I was going forwards, you know, not backwards.
Well, let's not speak too soon. We could keep hold of him, yeah. We could keep hold of him, yeah. So, yeah, congratulations, Jack Bennion. Someone else, Trev, has won an award, and it wasn't me, it wasn't you. Ryan Champion, what have you done with yourself?
He's got stuck in a mud hole still.
don't be an old stick in the mud, Trev. Let the man speak.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Trevor. No, as you found out a couple of weeks ago, Trevor Agnew is my agent. It is official, so you know he can just speak on my behalf. But I just went for a little jaunt around Africa for 8 days. Drove over a few bumps, up a few hills, saw a few rivers, and got stuck in that mud hole.
Now, before we go on, right, what we need to just bring Jack in for a second. Jack, what was it you said about Ryan Champion having his arse handed to him by Stig?
I never said that.
What? No, I think he did.
I said something along those lines, but it was very much in jest, and it was said with love, and I knew that he was going to prove me wrong, and he went out and did that fantastically.
Right, don't believe a word he said. No, in all seriousness, right, we did talk about when you weren't here, and we did it with jest, and we did it with love and everything else. But Trev's going to ask you about this in a minute because we've already spoke, and obviously our listeners haven't heard this yet. But when we said to you, go out and win it as you were leaving, did you genuinely think you could go out and win it? Honestly.
I thought, firstly, we had a good car. You know, we'd arguably the best car for Pitters. We've won the rally twice before with Stig and with Bjorn Valdegaard. So the car wasn't in doubt. I thought we'd probably have the speed. But you need an awful lot of luck in safari. You have to have luck on your side. And so I think anybody who expects a result before you go to a rally like that is optimistic. So, you know, all things being equal, I was hoping, but I don't think you could ever really know setting off into a rally like that.
Trev, has he been bashful?
Yeah, there was never a doubt in my mind who's going to win it. I had dinner with him a couple of weeks ago and he said, yeah, I'm going to go out. It's straightforward. You know, you've got to go with a positive attitude, Tony, don't you?
Well, you're the king of it. That's why I know you had dinner with him. Now, there might be things going on here. I don't know why he had dinner with you. I don't know whether because he had dinner with you because you're his mate, or whether you did a session with him for Safari.
Well, he's certainly a better driver. He's a co-driver because the last couple of years he's been co-driving mostly and he hasn't won it. So something's changed this year, isn't it?
Go on, Ray.
Actually, what it was. Trevor said that if I went and won Safari, he'd get me a deal for next year. So it's all down to you now, Trevor.
Of course.
Yeah, Adam, I'm sure I can get you a seat in the Safari next year again, no problem. The year after, I think it's every 2 years.
Except it's biannual, so...
You've got a bit of time off, Jack. We of course we did take the mick and everything else, but did you think our boy could go out and win it?
We spoke about it briefly at GB. We went to watch Shakedown together, and we were talking about it then. And you know, Ryan was kind of I could see in his eyes he was saying he wanted a he would be happy with the top five. But you know these drivers, you look in their eyes and they always want to win. And I think Ryan probably, although he might not admit it, would think that he could go out and win that event if he was doing most of the driving. So yeah, I think without it being awkward with Ryan being on the other end of the phone, that he probably thought he could go out and get a good result. And I don't think many people were expecting. It with all due respect to Ryan, there's a lot of good drivers out there, people like Carl Tundo and Stig Blomqvist, who are very experienced on the event, so for Ryan to go out there and do what he did, all jokes aside, is a pretty amazing achievement for a British driver to go and do something like
that. Take us through the 7 days, the emotional roller coaster. I know you put in 10 faster stage times, we were trying to keep an eye on things. Take us through the kind of the roller coaster you go through, because it must be it must be so difficult mentally to keep going in the heat, the dust and everything else, and keep it going, knowing full well that, this is kind of history making type events.
You just go to it one day at a time, quite honestly. For example, the very first stage of the rally was a tough stage. There was several bad mud holes. There was a couple of river crossings that had swollen. And we actually got stuck in a river for, I don't know, I would guess about 10 minutes at least, 10, 12 minutes we got stuck in a river crossing. And I had to get locals to push us out. And we had to stop at a mud hole that Ian Duncan had got stuck in. We probably lost 3 or 4 minutes waiting for him to be pushed out. And it really dropped about, 9 minutes on the stage. 9 minutes is huge on any other rally, but there you just have to say, okay, we've lost that, let's carry on. And then we were fastest on the next one, and you don't just take a little bit back, you end up taking 2 minutes back because other people have problems, and you just have to take it one day at a time. I've had one of the things I'm probably most proud of is having 10 of the fastest times on 21 competitive sections and not breaking the car, because it's easy to go fast in Africa, but it's easy to do a lot of damage as well. So we sort of find in a consistent pace where you can go quickly but not break the car, and just taking it stage by stage. We did, for example, one stage we did 70 kilometres with no brakes whatsoever, and for anybody who's experienced driving with no brakes, it's no fun, and it just felt like it went on and on forever, because it was something like 110, 120 kilometre stage, and the kilometres just ticked down so slowly. It was all relatively okay until we came across 3 giraffes. Now, it's not something most people would have happen on a snowboard, but when you come across 3 giraffes on the road, you wouldn't normally think about it. When you haven't got any brakes, it tends to focus the mind. Thankfully, there was a small gap, and we made it through the small gap, and no giraffes were injured in the making of the Safari Rally. But it's not something I'd like to do again.
Did you stick your neck out?
Trev, no! No, Trev, you didn't do that, did you? You didn't do that joke. Please tell me that nobody else heard Trev say that, and it was in my head.
Had to be done.
Now, Trev, right, before I let you in, because I want to bring you in a second, right, obviously, on this, it's not a blind rally, it's on Tulips, so or it is on tulips, as you know, is it on diagrams? How does it work? Because obviously for the uninitiated, you know, everyone kind of assumes now it's pace notes and everything else. But what information are you getting to be able to push a course, taking into account, all joking aside, giraffes, locals, other traffic and things like that?
Yeah, you just got a road book the night before. And so Richard Jackson and I compete with Richard owns the car, and in the past he's driven, or we've shared the drive, and this year he said, look, you drive the stages. But I still took care of the road books and did all the amendments, you know, made sure that that we had all the information in the road books that we needed. And it's literally like a road book, but on any normal rally is what you use on the road sections, but in Africa you use the same on stage. And you know, you think that's relatively simple, but the roads aren't necessarily clearly defined in Africa. So what you think is a junction, you're not 100% sure until you get to the next junction. And the interim distance is sometimes very slightly, the overall distance is very slightly. So you've got to use the information that's in the road book, but it isn't a reason you might think to keep your place in the road book. And the other thing in Africa, of course, is you've got things like double cautions and triple cautions, where the road is just literally washed away a few days earlier. So it's not like you can drive the road blind, because some of the washaways, the triple cautions, you can't see coming to them. And literally, you'll get there and the road will be missing. And you'll drop down 4 foot, picking your way through the rocks, and then climb up the other side, and then off you go again. And the variation in speed is massive. You know, there was one stage where our average speed was over 96 miles an hour. Average speed on a stage. You know, people, what are they whinging about in Sweden with a 2017 World Rally Car? Was it 84 miles an hour? We averaged 96 in a, you know, a 2011. But there's other sections where literally you've got to go at walking pace, and that's the challenge of safari, the variation in speed.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Trev, from a co-driving point of view, and I know obviously Rye's done kind of both sides of it as well, but How would you keep a driver on the straight and narrow, if you pardon the pun, just on kind of road books and stuff like that? And how much information do you think you can actually share with a driver from them?
See, I have no experience in Africa, Tony, so it's hard for me to answer. But obviously, Richard did a good job, Richard Jackson, who owns the car and is co-driving this year. To do that and keep concentration, I think that people forget about it. It's just the length of time that you're in the car and the temperatures and everything else goes with it. So to do that and keep that focus is pretty special. For me, from Ryan's point of view, I'd just be interested to find out how you actually pace yourself, because, as we said already, the only people who won this rally before are Africa. I think of Ian Duncan in particular, and also Stig Blomqvist, Bjorn Valdegaard, the world champions. Were you able to use Stig as a yardstick as such, or did you just drive at your own pace and just what you felt was sympathetic on the car but keeping a good pace?
And the way I treat the rally is when I can see, I drive as hard as I can. So on the fast sections, I do push literally as hard as I can at full pace. But then when you get to the unseen stuff, and particularly the rocky stuff, then you just back off. And that speed seems to work quietly. We were able to take some time on the faster sections, and then, you know, at least serve the car on the rougher stuff. And it's great having, let's say, the likes of Stig around to just gauge the stage times against, but also, you know, we were able to take a little bit of time without damaging the car. So I think, you know, I've managed to find my own pace there, and it is about not damaging the car, but at the same time, when you can see, then you make the most of it and push very hard.
Credit to It's full credit to Tuttles as well to produce a car that's so strong, not just yours, but the other cars that were in the team. And it seems to be every time you go there, they have a reliable car. What's so special about it?
The cars have just evolved. You know, Tuttles have been building 911s for, I don't know how long now, but I would guess, you know, 30 years or so. They've been to Africa a number of times with them, and the cars have evolved. And the cars are very strong, they're reliable, but they're very fast. You know, good engine, good top speed, very drivable. It's not a peaky car in any way, shape or form. It's a nice car to drive and a relatively easy car to drive. And I think that's one of the keys. And, you know, when I say relatively easy, it's torquey, strong engine, good traction. But learning a 911 takes a little bit of time. But thankfully, I've had enough miles in a 911 now that it works very well. But it isn't just the car. You know, I have to say Tuttle's doing an amazing job around the rally, the service crew, the organisation, the management of the team. They just know Africa well. They know the Safari Rally very well. And actually, Stig was very unlucky. Stig had Mikesh Adelson co-driving. So, you know, anybody who follows the British Championship is on the payoff, and he was with Stig. Stig was unlucky. He had some technical problems this year, which is rare with the cars, and also some suspension problems as well. So he was unlucky this year. But, you know, that's the nature of that rally. You can't expect too much. You know, you would think Stig Blomqvist guaranteed to be in the top three, if not higher, and Stig was unlucky this year.
Right, is it difficult to stay motivated for an event like that? Because if you've got, say you've got, like, if we're here in the UK and we've got a BTRDA rally, you start at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know you're going to finish at 4 o'clock, and you've got, you know, six stages between you and hopefully winning the event or winning your class or whatever it is. But when you've got an event spread across such a long period like this, is it difficult to kind of keep your eye on the end game and staying motivated towards that? Or is it something that sort of is powered through adrenaline through the event, or how does that kind of play out?
I would honestly say, as I said earlier, you treat it one day at a time, but by the time you get to day six, day seven, it's quite hard. You know, you've got to keep going. And the thing is, the length of the stages, that's the thing. The shorter stages are relatively easy to motivate yourself for and to pace yourself for. But, you know, some stages, for example, we did a 160-kilometre stage, so 100-mile stage, and to keep the concentration up, it's difficult in that mileage. You know, you might have time to think, you might have time to wander, because you're not at 110%. You can't be, because of the nature of the stages and what you have to deal with. So the longer stages are where you've got to keep the concentration, and it's amazing how much happens in a long stage. We did a 110-kilometre stage on, I think it was the opening stage on day seven, and unfortunately we wrong-spotted at a junction. We missed the junction. We went probably 3 k's past before we realised, came back on the right road. So we were first on the road at that point. But we rejoined the stage probably, I don't know, whatever, second or third on the road by then. Then got a puncture, had to stop and change it. Two more cars went past us. So I think by then we were fifth on the road. And then we passed one way or another the four cars in front of us, and we still ended up first on the road. And that's the crazy kind of things that can happen in Safari that never happen anywhere else. You know, you end up running fifth car on the road for some of the stages, but end up first on the road. It's some bizarre things happen in long stages, and you've just got to keep the concentration up, keep the driving up, not miss any of the cautions, double cautions, look after it on the rocky stuff, and just keep it rolling.
Fair play. Do you know when you are... kind of negotiating all these things and everything else, what's the situation in regards to, you know, do you have, I assume you have energy bars with you, you know, the camel packs and stuff like that, because I'm assuming there's no service in between. You go out and you kind of do your day's rally and then, you know, service is moving or whatever it may be.
No, quite the opposite actually. So we have roadside service, so we have a chase car, we have a Land Cruiser, a Safari Land Cruiser chase car. And the nature of the stages, the way they try to run them so that we do have service after each stage. Not always the case, but the majority of the time you do have service at the end of the stage. You know, you'll go and do a loop and back to a main road, or they try and you know, they're trying to arrange it so that the average historic cars at the end of the day, full historic spec cars, the only concession is modern dampers. And, you know, they want people to stay in the rally, so you do have service in between. And, you know, you can grab something to eat from the chase car or from sometimes as well, once a day. But, yeah, just the main thing is keeping hydrated, keeping fluids. So, obviously, we do have the Camelback in the car and the water bottle.
Yeah, I know you've done it a few times now and stuff, but do you think about diet and stuff like that when you're doing the event? Do you think about, you know, I need to be loading up on carbs, or I need to be loading up on this, you know, in the morning or whatever? Does that come into play, or is it just what you feel comfortable with taking on board and just kind of top yourself up as you go?
Well, I think you're right about being comfortable with what you take on board. You're careful about what you eat, not necessarily from a dietary point of view.
I'd be more careful about what I drink.
No, you've got to keep the energy up, and you know, we do have team physio John Jones here. John actually works for the Hyundai World Rally team as well, and John makes sure that we have the you know, the drinks, the recovery drinks, and he makes sure that we stay hydrated. So and again, that's part of Team Tuttle. We it's not just about the car. We also look after the drivers. We have a sports massage therapist as well that cracks us back into the right shape on a night, and they're the sort of unseen support that we have in the team that just make life much easier than it would otherwise be.
And pardon the pun, you did get a happy ending of some degree at the end. Can you perhaps explain just kind of what happened for our listeners as best as you can, and how we ended up with the result being the result?
Yeah, so going into day seven, we had a little bit of a lead, not a big lead, but a little bit of a lead. The middle stage of the day, we arrived, we were running first on the road. We were told at the stage start that there was an issue with a mud haul. And what the organisers do, if they know there's going to be an issue, they send a mud car in there so that if anybody does get stuck, they can pull the car out and keep the rally running. That's all part of Safari. We were told there wasn't a mud car there, even though it had been requested. And I said, well, is the mud hole passable? And the answer was, well, we'll check. And a few phone calls were made, and yes, it's passable. We were first car on the road. We got to this mud hole. We'd actually used it on the first day in the opposite direction. Now, I'd managed to get through this mud hole, you know, unaided. So bearing in mind, I've been told by the organisers at the start of the stage it was passable. I'm first car on the road. I've got through it before. You know, what can you do? So we went into the mud hole, had a good go at it. We weren't far from the end of it, but actually no car was getting through it. It was quite a deep mud hole. You couldn't see how deep to approach it. And actually no two-wheel drive car was ever going to get through there. And the course cars for the event were one Land Cruiser and one Hilux. And apparently the Hilux had gone through in two-wheel drive, but obviously it's a lot higher and it's on rough tyres. And a gravel tyre in deep mud just doesn't work. And we got stuck in the mud hole. Basically, that blocked the stage. But other cars had got stuck in a previous mud hole, and actually the only other car to complete the stage, or the only car that completed the stage unhindered was Cal Thunder in the TR7V8 built by Ian Gwynn by BGM Sport. And Carl came to the mud hole, saw stuck in it, realised he couldn't get through it, and backtracked up the stage about 300 or 400 metres until he found another track that basically bypassed the mud hole and came back onto the stage. Carl Thunder was the car behind us, and Carl realised that we were stuck. He realised he couldn't get through the mud hole, so what he actually did was backtrack up the stage about 300 or 400 metres. He actually found another track that took him around the mud hole. And so he got to the end of the stage, and he's got obviously a very competitive time. Our point with the organisers was that, you know, we followed the stage as demanded, really, by the regulations, and it wasn't passable. There was simply no way any car was getting through the correct route. And it wasn't like we could divert around the mud hole immediately. You know, you have to go a long way back. Now, as it happened, a lot of people were stuck in a previous mud hole, but had you had
you know, 10 or 20 cars trying to backtrack up the stage, obviously that would have created quite a dangerous situation. So it became a situation of the stage probably shouldn't have run. So the stewards decided that evening that they'd cancel the stage. But then the following day, obviously the Kenyans supported Carl and Tim's appeal that the stage should count. And obviously that meant it would have won the rally by something like an hour. But from our point of view, the stage was impassable. So anyway, the organisers decided there was no compromise, and they put us as equal victors. I'm actually Carl, a great guy, fantastic project with the TR7V8. I mean, can you imagine the TR7V8 not only getting through the Safari Rally, but being competitive as well? So it wasn't perfect for anybody. But at the end of the day, we declared joint winners. I'm happy with our performance. You know, we were put throughout the rally. Carl did a great job all the way through as well, and that's the end of it. So unconventional, maybe not ideal, but that was a compromise that was drawn at the end.
Good negotiation skills. Do you want to sort out Brexit now?
Well, you know, that was the thing. To be honest, when he finished that rally, the last thing anybody wanted to do was protest and counter-protest. We all just wanted a beer.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. Obviously, that was the conclusion. While you were away, right, somebody quite senior decided that rallies now should be about 6 miles long. And we didn't cover it last week. The bit that the unbroadcastable bit was Jack Benyon's reaction to it, which we didn't put in last week's podcast. Because we thought we'd save it for this week, because you've just got back from Safari. Did you hear, I'm going to let Jack ask the question. Actually, Jack, do you want to ask Ryan about 6 mile rallies?
I think the word I used was juxtaposition. Now that's the kind of word that wins you awards. Check that out.
Yeah, I think my words would be shorter than that.
I think mine were last week as well. The unbroadcastable bit. Anyway, let's get into this, shall we? The issue that Yarmo Mahonen's raised is that he thinks that rallies in the WRC need to be a sort of similar kind of format. The stages should be shorter because that's the kind of cars we've got nowadays, and there's, you know, there's no place in the WRC for 80 kilometer stages and things like this. So I guess coming back from where you've just been, Raya, I imagine you've got some quite strong thoughts about this. And I don't know if you did you manage to get to see any of Yarmo's thoughts in MN last week, or did you miss that?
Yeah, no, I did, and I would just say there's no place in the WRC anymore for Yarmo Mahonen.
Brilliant.
There you go.
Do we need to discuss it any further? I think that's the absolute perfect way to sum it up.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. I think you've nailed it. Trev, we didn't get Trev's thoughts on it last week. I don't think we're going to – I think we're all going to have the same pretty – Ryan Champion really should – yeah. I tell you what, you should be a politician, Ryan. how you've just wrapped up Safari and how you've just sorted somebody quite senior in the FIA out very, very quickly. Trev, we didn't get your thoughts on it. I'm assuming it's not a million miles away from Ryan Champions and Jack Benyon's.
Yeah, we'll just leave it there, I think. That's perfectly done. Is there anything else that we need to discuss, or are we going to end it there?
No, I think it's done there. It's nailed. It's nailed its hat on, hasn't it? But there you go. Go on, sorry.
The interesting thing about it, I'm sort of a little bit with Oliver Ceasley on this, you have to work out who you're trying to appeal to first off. And it's interesting because I went round to a friend's house to watch rugby a couple of times recently in football, and the kids in the house don't sit down to watch it. And I often thought, well, why do they not watch sport the way we did when we were growing up? And this one guy, he came to he came to the rallycross with us in Linden Hill a couple of years ago, and he enjoyed it. So I was asking him if he was interested in rallying and how he'd get interested in rallying. It was down a totally different route to the way we think about it and the way rallying's traditionally been thought about. So I think there's certainly scope to try and get young kids engaged in some sort of focus group just to try and work out where the audience is going to come from, where the people who pay for it are going to come from in the future. So I don't agree with doing things traditionally the way they've always been done, but they need to have a little bit more creativity in how we're going to mould it for the future audience.
That's absolutely right, Tony, because in so many of these situations, not just rally and lots of other types of motorsport as well, are always talking about how they're going to attract the, you know, the younger viewer and things like this. But what they seem to realise is when if they don't consider the existing viewer as well, that they're going to alienate them by making the changes that they want to make. So when you do make that change, you can't just make a change towards the younger viewer and not take into account what the, you know, the existing viewer thinks, because otherwise you're just going to alienate half of the discipline, aren't you? You know, it needs to be well considered, and I don't think this proposal has been well considered at all. And you know, the thing I love about rallying so much is, you know, as you all know, I'm a big circuit racing fan as well. Won't go into that too much, obviously, on a rally podcast. But the fact that all these events are so different and in so many different places and in so many different landscapes is what makes rallying so beautiful and so brilliant. You know, a circuit race is at a track. You can only do that circuit. That's all you can do. You know, they might have different configurations or whatever, but you know, if you go to the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, it's going to be the same every year. Rallying it's got so much to choose from, so much landscape to use, and the fact that you want all the events to be exactly the same is bizarre to me.
I think what's really important is that the events can breathe. But just before we go any further with this, Ryan Champion, thank you for being, you've effectively been our guest, by the way, this week. I didn't even realise you were like the guest this week. So we're going to let you now obviously go off, because you don't have to do full programmes anymore. Now you're a Safari winner.
Well, you know, my agent, he handles these things, and I believe he's staying on for a little bit longer. So if you want to negotiate next week, that's fine.
He's going to cover for you. Folks, we're going to go to a little break. Congratulations again to our boy, Ryan Champion, on his Safari win. And we'll be back after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloging, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Obviously, we had to let Rye go there. We've got his agent staying with us anyway. But just picking up on what Jack's just been saying, I think we're all kind of singing from the same hymn sheet. Again, you know, I've said this time and time again. Obviously, I covered Rallycross for a couple of years. I presented the programmes and stuff, and I was quite involved with it. And I understand the concept of why it's fast food, and rally is probably a little bit more gourmet, Trev. I think that's how I see it. And I don't think there'd be as much comparison if Rallycross didn't have the word rally in the beginning of it. And I've said that before as well.
Yeah, well, Rallycross has got its flaws as well. You know, a lot of tracks you go to and first person into the corner wins the race, and that's a little bit boring, but there's a lot more excitement and short bursts. Rallying, of course, is different to that. In the countries that you visit, the photography is incredible that you see, some of the shots we see when we watch the live stages as well. And that's part of what we do and why we've always been attracted to it and why lots of people throughout the world are attracted to it. But again, I'd just like to see, it's what are we making the changes for and who are we making the changes for? If you think of it, any business at the end of the day, and it has to be a business, who are the people who are going to pay for it? What's going to interest them in it? And we need to take a broader spread on that. And as I said before, we need to look further than next year, the year after. We've got to look the minimum of five years down the track. And then take into consideration what car manufacturers are doing at that point. And certainly electrification, as I said before, has to be something that needs to be thought about very seriously. In other forms of motorsport, we're losing manufacturers to Formula E in particular. So I'd like to see a little more of that, a Ross Brawn type person brought in to have more of a strategy in place where we know what we're doing.
I think we all hoped, though, Trev, just going back a little bit, and obviously what's been referred to recently in the press made reference back to the days of possibly this Cloverleaf format, of course, which Dave Richards was very passionate about. And I think we all thought we were getting that back in the day when Dave Richards came in, and you know, if anything, it probably set us back a little bit.
David Richards was adamant that live stages were the way to go. And personally, I didn't think rallying's geared for live stages. Certainly downhill skiing, yeah, when you're covering a minute or 30 or 90 seconds, whatever it may be, one skier after the other, it works that way. But when you've got in-car cameras, you've got helicopter shots, you've got two cars that are the same. I remember one particular, Morgan Park, I think it was, in Rally GB. I think Colin McRae got a puncture in a Citroen. And it just wasn't really easy to follow at that point. And that just sort of summed it up for me at the time. And that's why it was brought in to do that. And personally, I think highlights are the way to go with rallying or live streaming. If you're going to go live stream it, but just get comments at the end of the stage, maybe one shot somewhere. But yeah, it's a different setup, I think.
Jack, obviously you're the youngest out of the three of us. Trev obviously grew up in a passionate part of the world with regards to rallying and you know, closed road stuff and things like that. I come from an inner city where boxing and football were the main sports, and you know, participated in both of those. But by the same token, I was always really passionate about rallying, but I was the odd one out. I don't know, obviously, you know, I know your dad is massively into rallying as well. Obviously, it was your dad's passion. Were you the odd one out in school? Was everybody else into other sports and your thing was rallying? Because this is what we're trying to tap into, isn't it? It's trying to find that way.
Yeah, definitely. That was how I was as a kid. No one in my school sort of followed rallying or knew anything about it, really. So, yeah, it was definitely my dad's passion. He passed it down to me. And, you know, that is a bit worrying, isn't it? Looking at the future and you know, what can be done. You know, I think there's ideas out there. And I think, you know, Yarmo himself has had some, you know, good ideas in terms of looking at how to do things. But I think, you know, you've got to have a variety in there, and you can't just have a whole rally built on, you know, six mile stages. It's, you know, it's just not, that's not the challenge that drivers want. It's not what the fans want to see. It's not, you know, it's not one of the great things that you get out of people when they see a clip of rallying, especially the people who don't know much about it, is, you know, wow, what are those guys doing? You know, how are they doing that? It's a complete misunderstanding of what is going on in that car, because they don't understand the sport and they don't know what's going on. And, you know, a 6 mile stage is not going to prove what these guys can do in a car as much as a, you know, as much as a 12 mile stage or a 20 mile stage. And that's, you know, that's just maths of adding up mileage, isn't it? But for me, you know, the argument that the short stages are going to create things on Twitter doesn't work for me either, because for me, I get excited by the, you know, the drip feed of communication that comes through from a rally. You know, I love listening to the radio and listening to the people on there sort of hypothesizing about what's happening and what's going on. And, you know, are the tires going to work? Is the car setup going to work? What happened in the last stage? Is that going to affect this stage? And the whole drip feed situation of having to wait for the results is something that also is a little bit different in rallying compared to other motorsports as well. So, you know, that's something that I actually really like and wouldn't want to change.
Do you think, though, Jack, and you know, you, I class you as a bit of an anomaly in all this, because you've grown up with rallying because of your dad and stuff like that. You know, these days, the attention span, and Trev's just mentioned it there, obviously, with his friend, you know, his kids watching sport and stuff like that. The attention span seems to be so short now. And again, you know, Al, who produces the podcast for us, Al does a lot of video work for different organisations and stuff like that. And I know a lot of the video work he does are geared towards kind of 3-4 minute videos that are social media friendly, because that's deemed now to be the attention span of people.
Yeah, sorry, Trevor, go on.
What about you? My attention span is something like that. I'm watching a video on YouTube and I'm 53 years of age. What's it going to be like for, you know, a kid of 18 or even less than a kid of 10 or 11 years of age? You know, Oliver Ceasley from the WRC promoters quoted the young people today as attention spans between 8 and 14 minutes. I get that part of it. I understand it. You know, I just remember back to, if you type into Google or YouTube the 1981 Portugal Rally, you'll see a Barry Hinchcliffe video last about 10, 15 minutes. It was on World of Sport in the UK for all the older users, and it was absolutely phenomenal.
Wow.
You watch that, and that is just brilliant. And I haven't, you know, I don't know what was so good about it. The cars were moving about a lot, but it was just stunning. The scenery and the music, everything went together with it. But, you know, we don't do that now for some reason.
Tony, no, Tony, going back to your point about social media and short video clips and stuff, I definitely agree with that 100%. And Yarmo does mention that. The answer to that for me is that the WRC should be pumping out more video through the day in terms of where Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. There needs to be a better for me. Having Red Bull behind it, I think they're getting there, and it's clearly improved over the last 2 years. You've seen a stark improvement in terms of what the WRC has been doing online and what they've been doing with video and things like that. For me, it's got to go further. F1's done it recently, and it's taken them a little bit of time to adapt. But wild in-car moments and things like that go really well. Things like that is going to draw people in, and that's when you hope that you sort of opening the sport up to new people. When they see a clip of Chris Meek going into a car park, for example, and when that's rammed down people's throats on social media, that's when you start to attract new people into the sport. And maybe you're not going to get your general viewer to watch a 12 or a 15 minute stage or watch it for 45 minutes while every single car goes through, but that's no different. That's always been the same in rallying. People haven't always sat down and watched 15 minutes of a single stage. People have gone out and spectated. People have done things like that in the past. And for me, it's just moving. You've just got to move with the time, haven't you? And give people what they want. And I think that's where we're struggling, is identifying how do you open up a sport to people who are not interested in it. For me, the best way to do that is through, like you said, short video clips and things like that on social media. But it's got to be interesting stuff, and it's got to be consistently, pushed down people's throats so that they're seeing it all the time.
I guess the compromise. Sorry, Trev. Just before you come in, I guess the compromise for me is the compromise of finding the link to get new people in over compromising the actual sport itself.
That's the trouble. That's the problem I'm having, and that's that. Yarmo's views might appear bizarre to some people, but I can see where he's coming from in the sense that there does need to be something done to attract the younger generation into the sport, because we've all seen it out on rallies that the average age of organisers, volunteers, drivers is going up and up every single year, and we all see it. We have all seen that happening at some point on different events. WRC, the top level of sport, might be a bit of an exception, but as things start to trickle down, the average age is going up, so something does need to be done. And while Yarmo's ideas are a bit out there, and we've all had a bit of a laugh about it on this podcast, but at least he is someone at the FIA who is suggesting something that that can be done, and he should be credited for that. While his ideas aren't something that some of the older generation of the sport are going to agree with, at least he's trying to come up with something that does say this is the problem, and here's a solution to fix it.
Trev,
yeah, the social media side of things. I remember there was a test in Barcelona before the F1 season starts. The first time that F1 opened up the social media, and it seemed to be quite a hit. I actually had a look at some of it. And if you get the right people doing that and delivering those short feeds that are something a little bit different, more of an insights, Citroën, of course, do the live from the service part video on Facebook. I've watched a couple of them, but it's the same quotes time after time you get from the drivers that you hear at the end of the stages anyway. So it needs to be something a little bit more creative or innovative that'll get you just understand a little bit more about what happens behind the scenes. And I think if you're getting that fed in during the day between stages when the drivers are on the road sections, then that'll help, I think.
I wonder whether, and it's got to be doable, fellas. This has got to be doable, and I'm sure someone will shoot me down. And by all means, folks, you know how to get in contact with us. I really like, and I don't watch it as much now as what I used to. And again, I'm going to bring Roundy in. I'm going to be guilty of this. I really like British touring cars. Okay. I don't watch it as much as what I used to. I used to watch it quite a lot. But one piece of technology they kind of brought in over the last, I think probably the last 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, is when they're doing the warm-up lap, and they'll go to the drivers in the car, and they'll have obviously a forward-facing camera, and the commentary team will be able to talk to the driver, and I think that's wonderful. I think that's really, really good. Now, I'm not saying obviously we do that on a stage, but I just wonder on road sections or whatever, could we be talking to the drivers? Could we be getting, I seem to remember something similar happened a few years ago, but it never really took off. Or I might have imagined it or dreamed it or whatever. By all means, put me straight. But something like that.
Yeah, it was on Channel 4. I think that originated in Australia. I remember seeing it when I was over there living. Dick Johnson, I remember, Channel 7, the Shell Sierra. I think it was at the time. So that was the start of the camera used to rotate in the car as well. It was the same camera. It was forward facing and it scrolled around or rotated around to the driver. Yeah, something like that would be a bit different. It's interesting, you mentioned Red Bull, and I thought it was fantastic at the start of the year getting Mark Webber involved and seeing his perspective and his enthusiasm. And the Red Bull seems to have dropped off towards the end of the year, even Rally GB, because I was busy and I wasn't able to get back to it. By the time I got back to have a look for the coverage from Rally GB, it had disappeared. So the Nicky Griss side of things with Sebastian Loeb, I missed all of that, and I can't go back and watch it again. I don't know about you guys, but I've just stayed with WRC Plus. I didn't really, apart from the odd time, have a look and see what Mike Chen, who's a fantastic presenter, was doing. But it's just a habit, I think, and yeah, I'm guilty of maybe not exploring Red Bull a little bit more to see what they were doing. But did you guys?
Probably a bit like you, Trev. I kind of flirted with it, I guess, at the beginning of the year. But my go-to was always WRC Plus. I think. But how about you, Trev?
I did watch quite a lot of the Red Bull coverage through the year. Okay. Sorry to be the odd one out.
No, good.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I thought it was a little bit of a different approach. I thought the programs were good, and as you said, Trevor, Mike Chen's very good at what he does. I thought the only guilty bit was maybe mixing it up through the year. I think they maybe could have mixed up the presenters a little bit through the year just to provide something completely different on each event. But that's just a personal thing, and I don't think it worked badly how it worked as it was, really. I quite enjoyed it, and it's good that it was basically, you know, kind of free to the masses. But you've got to have something driving people in there, haven't you? And this is where, you know, it comes back to, you know, how do you get people to watch a sport and, you know, treading over all ground here. But stuff I've already discussed on the podcast earlier, really.
Yeah. You know, it's such a difficult, you know, for 20 odd years I've been a salesman. Okay, that's kind of what I've done. I've been relatively successful, touch wood, at it. But rally as a sell, I always find really, really difficult to someone unless I put them in a car. And I've done that quite a few times with customers, not necessarily with me, because I'm not saying it's that impressive with me. But when I want to do something slightly different with a customer, I will go and put them in a rally car with somebody, someone like Ryan or someone like that. And trust me, it's a once in a lifetime experience for some of these people. And all of a sudden they become interested in rallying, you know, using me again as an example, because I can, I work quite closely with a brewery over in America, and we had the guys over from the brewery. They didn't understand what rallying was. We took them somewhere, we rented the forest, and we put them in a rally car. And, you know, they have been completely transformed and suddenly find themselves passionate about rallying and what we do and everything else. And I've looked at rallying now over in the States and things like that. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I don't think we can put everybody in a rally car, but I don't know, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't know what, I used to work at a lot of rally schools as well, Trev. So, you know, I remember working at rally schools where we could be getting through 100 people a day and doing long weekends and stuff like that. I've just constant stream of people doing rally school days. Now, I don't think rally schools are as busy as what they used to be either. I think they're doing okay. But as a rule, I can remember them being rammed all as I worked at. And whether it was the McRae effect or obviously what was going on with Richard Burns and McRae as well, I really don't know, but there's something missing.
Well, as you know, a lot of my work is sales coach and working with sales teams and getting them to perform a little bit better. And it can be overcomplicated sales. It's really simple, as far as I can see. Sales, the ultimate in sales is getting your customer to sell your product or your service, whatever it may be for you. And that's it. And when they see how your product or service, whether it be, I use a MacBook as an example. I never used to have one. Somebody told me to buy one. They didn't know anybody who'd bought my MacBook back to a PC. And I thought, okay, that's a good recommendation. On the back of that, I probably sold about 25, 30 of them over the years that I've had it, simply because it makes my life easier, more productive. It links up to my phone, et cetera, et cetera. In rallying, what is it we're actually selling? Is it that excitement when you take people to an event that they want to go and tell other people about? And that's what I feel isn't really drilled down, and it's not focused on. What is it you want your customers to go away and tell other people to get them excited about the sport? And as Jack says, over old ground, bringing personalities in that people respect, and getting them fired up about it and excited about it. They'll go on their social media. You know, as I said to you before, they like a Chris Evans going to Rally GB, where he's got a 9 million audience in Radio 2. Something like that, I think, would help.
Jack, before we move on to our any other businesses, which I'm assuming, as ever, boys, you've got awesome ones. Have you got anything else you want to add to Yarmo's comments or certainly moving forward, any more thoughts?
No, I just think it's one further thing I will add is I tweeted not long after the story went out just to say, make sure you read what Yarmo's actually got to say, because I think some people these days are guilty of just reading a headline and kind of flipping out about that. And, you know, that's just the way kind of things work these days. But for me, it was good to see a good reaction to that. And a lot of people were actually reading some of Yarmo's thoughts. And, you know, do go and read that story and read all of his suggestions, because they're not all completely bizarre. Some of them are, you know, relatively sensible. And it was good to see the rallying community kind of read the story and kind of take on board the points. And there's some really sort of enthusiastic and intelligent debate afterwards, which can't be said for a lot of motorsport out there. You know, I can tell you that for a fact from some of the things I see. So to see that from the rallying community was really impressive and really nice to see, actually.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rally to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Boys, before we go to any other business, there's a few other stories that have kind of been trickling through. I'll come to you first, Jack, obviously, because it's in your paper with regards to doing it a disservice, but basically what convinced Sebastian Ogier to stay with M Sport and what difference is going to be for M Sport next year, tying up with the American side of the motorsport division of Ford Performance.
Yeah, I think obviously, being a complete outsider and not really knowing a whole lot about Ford Performance, I'd say that's probably where a lot of Ford's motorsport money is, given that's where the World Joints program is with the car they've got there. So good to see that. You know, it doesn't look like we're going to get a full kind of Ford works entry as it stands. You know, that may change in the future. You know, I'm not ruling that out by any means. But as it stands, that seems to be where we're at. We've got increased performance increased support from Ford Performance. So good news for M Sport. It should help them keep up the development, because that's what we're going to get into. You know, we've got that first year out of the way, and a lot of next year is going to be down to who pumps in the most money to develop their car. You know, it's not going to be the be all and end all, but that will be very important, is, you know, who's got that budget to really develop their cars further. And I think that's where we saw VW quite sort of dominant in that sense when they were around, is they always had that budget to kind of reinvest in their car and develop it. So hopefully Ford coming on board a little bit more will help sport with that.
You were confident. I was still quizzical that Seb was going to stay. Are we sure that the financial interval performance coming on board, or is it still going to be Red Bull, do you think? How do you see this one working?
Yeah, I don't think it's a commercial deal. Red Bull will be there. I think it's more around the commitment to the performance side of things and the help. They've talked about the aero efficiency that they're going to look at. So that's something that they can certainly help with. And to make the car competitive, I think, is where the focus. That's what Bastian were interested in. As regards getting more money, I don't think that's part of what they're talking about here. It's just simply technical help and budget to do more development, more testing. And again, the aero thing seems to be a lot of focus. I don't really get that on gravel. I know certainly David Lapworth, technical director of ProDrive, he wasn't convinced that aero on gravel works because the car sits so high. But on tarmac, there's no doubt it's going to help with it. So it's just the main technical areas of what he wanted to focus on to make the car more competitive, because everybody else will move forward with manufacturer money.
Are we surprised that it took this amount of time, or was it this a tactical thing with regards to, obviously, because Ford Performance had committed to Ken's program? And now we know, obviously, M Sport built the focuses for Ken Block's Hoonan Racing Monster Energy team. Was this basically the reason why this has been held back? Because obviously we know that, Jack, that Mark Rushbrook was over on, I think he was on Monte Carlo, wasn't he, at the beginning of the year, when Seb won that. I'm sure he was. I'm sure there were some pictures of him over there as well. So do you think this has been perhaps in the back pocket, so to speak, of Mr. Wilson, and they've had to kind of ride out, you know, the last season of WRX, and now they've announced it? Do you think it's been a bit of that?
I'm not so sure, really. That's a difficult question to answer without knowing the ins and outs of Poor Performance, and no one other than you know, the guys at Poor Performance will know the answer to that question. But you know, for me, it's all I can add further, sorry, is, you know, it's really good for them that they've got some partnership on board. And, you know, some people might look at it and think it's convenient that the World Rallycross program has ended, and now Ford Performance suddenly increasing their involvement with M Sport. But, you know, I think Ford Performance will have looked at this and seen the opportunity that they've got with Sebastien Ogier, who without doubt is the best rally driver out there at the minute. They've got a perfect opportunity to invest more and help him to further that, because although they've had a bit of a free ride this year in terms of, well, free ride's definitely not a fair way to put it, because they already invested quite heavily in M Sport as it was, but, you know, they've had a fairly easy way in this year, investing a lot less money than the other manufacturers would have done into their programs, and they've won the championship and the manufacturers' championship as well. So I think they've seen what they've got with Sebastien, and, you know, they've got that opportunity to move forward now. And if they do push forward and help M Sport invest and move forward, then they might have a chance of continuing the success.
Happy days. A couple of bits of little bit of admin before. Trev, have you got any other business this week?
Yeah, just really something that.
Trev, hold it. I just wanted to make sure you had.
He's
it.
He's so excited you. About his any other business. He's just blurting out random.
Yeah, just park it there, Trev. It's all right. In the words of Jimbo and on Bullseye, that's safe. That's over there. That's parked. Right. I nearly said Ryan Champion. Then Jack Bengen, have you got yours?
That's a honourable confusion that you've made there. I'm very happy with that one.
I don't want yours. I'm going to do a little bit of admin. Congratulations to the boys at MEN. First win for a national rally for the Iris. Top drive. I've seen some of the in-car. I've had a couple of conversations with Chris via text. He's over in Malaysia at the moment. And fair play, Ollie Mellors drove that car very, very, very hard and very, very well. So congratulations to all the boys and girls there at MEN. And I wish you the very best of luck with moving forward with that. Love the story of Andreas and Thierry sharing a car at Monza. I think it was a great deal of fun. I still don't know. Jack, you know who won the Monza Rally Sprint? Do you know how that finished up?
It's really complicated because it's divided into two events, isn't it? It's the Monza Rally Sprint, and then there's the separate event. So there's two different events. I'm pretty sure Mikkelsen and Nerbo won one of them, but I'm not sure which one they won. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay, there you go. One last thing.
Won one of them.
Did he? Yeah. Was he in a Fiesta? Yeah. Yeah, I thought he would be. Last little bit of admin-y stuff before we go. Again, Jack, it's in your paper. I thought it was a potentially interesting discussion piece. A C3 customer car available next year, 2018, for via, I think it's run by PH. PH are offering the C3 2017 World Rally Car.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to go out to a privateer, but Citroën seems to be quite keen that they get to choose who is in the car. So it'd be interesting to see who picks up that last car and who it'll actually be. It'll obviously, well, I imagine if it's a customer car, then it's going to be someone with a fair bit of money. But Citroën are going to sort of keep control over who actually gets in the car. So we're not going to get a complete sort of random driver taking it up. We're going to get someone that Citroën approves of, at least.
Trev, who do you reckon?
I suppose it's Mads Osberg again. We've talked about him last week, so it has to be who's competent. He's got experience of it, yeah.
Yeah, I must admit that ran through my mind as well. Right, boys, we're at any other business. We're at that section of the programme. We'll go to let's go to Trev first for any other business.
Right, my any other business is about something that a lot of young drivers talk to me about, and it's how am I going to get the money to go with this programme? It's limited in self-belief, and they all say, I don't have the money, I never had the money, how am I ever going to get it? And I never had money when we finished the British Championship. I decided that rather than having an inherent right to go to the World Championship, we'll go and find a different way of doing it. We'll be a bit creative, and as all ideas happen in the pub, with another guy called Angus Watt, we come up with this idea to start a sports management company and get investors to invest in my driver at the time, which was Neil Wearden. So off we went to London. We set up a serviced office, and within 6 months, we had £1 million in the bank. It wasn't as straightforward as that, but it was just a different attitude. And when you go and you approach the right people, we're talking about getting people interested in motorsport. There's plenty of people interested in motorsport. Plenty of people are interested in rallying. They've got plenty of money. And you got to get in front of these people. And that's basically what I think has happened with Ryan Champions Route. So about 5 years ago, to give you an idea, we were doing a launch for a company, me, Ryan and Justin Beale. And I was going back to a place called Deddington to visit a few friends where I moved over when I moved over to England 20 years ago. And we just went to the pub for a couple of beers. And in the pub with me, Ryan Champion and Justin Beale arrived Richard Tuttle. And they all knew each other. Richard Tuttle hadn't seen the guys in a while. And he needed some instructors for Sweden, for his ice driving. On the back of that, Ryan Champion went out to help him out. On the back of that, he met Richard Jackson. On the back of that, they decided to do a safari rally. On the back of that, Ryan Champion wins a safari rally. So there's a great book called The Luck Factor. And this luck factor book says that there's no such a thing as good luck or bad luck. It's all about spotting an opportunity, making the most of an opportunity, and going out and grabbing it with both hands and doing something with it. So there's definitely ways, without putting these limiting beliefs in place, which a lot of, as I say, young drivers say about finance. I didn't know anything about finance when I had to go at it and was able to do it. So I think that's quite interesting, the way that whole thing worked out with Ryan, because it's not the first time it's happened. And it's just a matter of seeing the opportunities and having a go and making the most of them.
So is it right what we're saying is that Ryan Champion didn't actually win the safari rally, Trevor Agnew won the safari rally?
I thought you'd blink it that way, but the whole point of it is, Jack, now that you've won this award, you've got to get yourself in the right window now to move on.
Do you know what? Right. Apart from the fact that I was getting, when Trevor started to wrap up, I was thinking, don't really want to follow that. It's a bit like when I'm waking up a Saturday night and I'm in a club and someone's just absolutely stormed and you think, I don't want to go on after them. And I was thinking, do you know what? I'm going to make Jack go after Trev.
And then you get a prize comedian like me to come up with a brilliant joke and then you're in business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you know what? Just following on from what Trev said, I believe in a lot of what Trev says on lots of fronts, to be honest with you. And I kind of went with the ethos of do nothing and nothing will happen, and do something, something will happen. Mm-hmm. And this has happened to me twice. Very similar to what Trev's just explained. When I went to VW in 2002, Jesus, I'm getting old, 2002, which is 16 nearly years ago, to do the BRC in their Group M Polo and the Polo Challenge, I signed a contract. Trevor loved this. I signed a contract to say I would effectively bring budget to the team to cover the car and for me and pay all my costs and everything else. And I signed a contract to say we would be there. The moment I signed that contract, Trev, you're going to love this story, right? The Pirelli was in the April. I signed the contract in February.
Yep.
I didn't have a penny.
Yep. Fair enough. A lot of people do that.
Nothing focuses the mind more. Yep. Then realizing you have to find, and it wasn't a lot of money back in the day, really. I think it was about 23,000 quid, 24,000 quid I had to find, which is a lot of money, actually. You know what? I'm not saying that in a flippant way, but for what I got, it wasn't a lot of money. And then on another story, there would never be a podcast, and I would never have probably got involved back in the day with Jimbo and Colin doing Total Rally if I hadn't read a book called The Yes Man, which is wrote by Danny Wallace, who is a very, very funny man and a writer. And there was a film made about the book, which isn't particularly great, doesn't really do it justice, but the book is very, very good. And he was quite a negative person, and he decided to say yes more in his life. And I decided, he did it for a year, I decided to do it for a week. I said yes to everything for a week, and I did end up in some weird and wonderful places. And one of them was Corsica. Mm-hmm. And I ended up working with somebody who you know, Trev, because I was out there looking after guests with Simon Hughes.
Yes.
And that's how I met Colin, and that's how we first spoke about doing Total Rally.
Yeah.
And that was in 2008. Uh-huh. That would have been. There you go. So nine years ago.
Simon Hughes is our junior driver, Slipstream. We started that sports agency as well. Wonderful. Yeah. All ties
there you go. There you go. There you go. It all comes back around. Anyway, any other business? I'll do mine now. Jack, mine's really, really short. David Evans has wrote a piece on it as well in your particular publication. Of course, MN, I really, really want to see just Robert Kubica confirmed back in an F1 car. I just want the story complete.
I agree.
I was lucky enough to meet him on Sunday at the Autosport Awards, and it was a very humbling moment and very odd. He's got a very sort of significant aura about him I guess it's what he's been through and sort of the things he's achieved since what he's been through. It kind of creates that aura a little bit, but fantastic man. And he was very keen to go and visit Billy Munger, who some people may not know lost both of his lower legs in a crash in April in Formula 4 in the UK. So and Sebastian Ogier as well. And Elvin Evans, he even went over to Elvin and congratulated him on his Rally GB win as well. So yeah, top guy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that's my any other business, Jack. For the final, any other business of this week?
Well, first of all, ignore any jokes regarding Trevor Agnew's any other business, because it was fantastic. And as always, I like to ruin the mood by making stupid jokes. But my actual any other business is a video I watched this week. By Rob Duggan. Did any of you see this?
No.
I've seen a little bit of it. Is this in the Mark 2 is it his sister?
It is, Tara, his sister. Yeah. So Rob Duggan, 2016 junior BRC champion in the Vauxhall Adam. Bit of a short stint in the JWRC this year, but maybe we won't go too much into that just now. But he's done various other bits and bobs and has driven Millington Mark II Escorts before as well. And he was out defending his Killarney historic rally win. Don't let the title fool you, because the event has a modified section, which is obviously for newer cars. So he did that event in 2016, and it was his first event in a 2.5 litre Millington Escort, and he won and did a pretty good job there. And then there's a video that he's put up this week, which is his onboard from one of the stages at Killarney. I think it's stage 5, and at this point he's already got almost a 0.5 minute lead. And a few texts went back and forth between me and Rob, and he was quick to point out that he wasn't trying very hard, and he'd built up a bit of a gap, and he was just trying to keep hold of it. You know, the usual book of rally driving excuses type thing. You know, I've heard them all. I've been at the stage ends. I've heard all these excuses. But if you watch that on board, it's all impressive. But there's at least there's a section in the middle where there's a quick left hander, and it leads onto some straight, and there's yumps, as I guess you would call them over there, lots of little jumps, and he's flat in sixth, doesn't even lift, and the car, I can feel the back of the car coming up behind me as I'm watching the video, and the hairs on your neck are going back up, and it takes you back to Gwyndaf's crash in 97 when the back end of his Escort popped up and that spewed him out and he crashed. And I'm just sat watching this video knowing the result of the rally that Rob's won, but also thinking that's not good, that might go wrong quickly, mate. And then you just watch the rest of the video in peace. But what a fantastic onboard, and what a talented lad he is. He's a bit
he's a phenomenal talent, Jack. He's phenomenal.
He's absolutely brilliant, and I really do hope,
Jack, you need to tweet the video.
Get the video and we'll get it regurgitated. I'll get that retweeted, no problem. And hopefully Rob's currently building an Escort, so hopefully he gets that built up and ready to go next year, and we see him back out on some rallies. But I guess there's some Irish people out there who are really hoping he doesn't get his Escort finished and get out there on some rallies, because he'll be taking a lot of wins away from a lot of people, I imagine.
That's a real shame. That's somebody who's got the talent to go all the way, and his WRC dreams, it seems, and what you're saying is are on hold.
It's about him obviously finding, I suppose, it's what makes him happy and getting back out rallying again, isn't it, Trev? That's the thing. But
you've got
anyway.
A choice of two things. You can become a salesperson, or you can find a salesperson who'll do it for you. And that's what I had to do, because I wasn't any good at sales back then, but I learned very quickly.
Yeah. Anyway, ironically, as we were finishing off that last section then, a former world champion was ringing me on the phone.
Oh.
You know him, Trev.
Former world champion might be Martin Rowe.
Yeah, Martin was ringing on my phone. And just as we were wrapping up, there you go. So he's just left me a message. So I need to give him a call back. So there you go, folks.
As well, so.
I'll ring him first because I know what he wants to speak to me about. Folks, that is the end of episode 9, season 10. One thing I'm going to ask you all to do. Right. It would be quite nice if you could give us some nice comments on iTunes. Do help. And I do love all the bits and pieces we have going backwards and forwards on Twitter and things like that. I'm going to put it out there. Do we do an end of season quiz this particular? We did one last Christmas. Some people thought it was corrupt and bent, and I basically fixed it, which of course is true. But do we go to the trouble of doing one this year, or do we do just a general extra episode? Because we've got one more episode before Christmas. But do we do a cheeky extra one with the absolute random quiz?
Do we get a vote, or is it just the
pub? No.
Okay.
To listeners, you let us know, and we'll make a decision on what we do with that. Folks, we do appreciate the download. As I say, it was great to have Rye on. I know we said it tongue-in-cheek and everything else, but we did grab him. He's absolutely flat out, obviously, after being away for so long, and very, very proud of him for his win. Really, really am, honestly. I felt like I was there with him. I'm so, so pleased.
Didn't it feel like a member of your family was winning the event? It was weird. It was really weird.
Yeah. Out of the pride I had.
All the drama at the end of it, yeah. It was good to see that video he did at the end where he was a little bit emotional. I think emotional is the word, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. He's a hard Yorkshireman. He doesn't show emotion.
I think it was more there'll be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, folks, please let us know what you think about doing the end of season absolute rally quiz. But we do appreciate the download. If you can leave us some nice messages, that would be lovely too. We will be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.